remembered answering the phone. And I said, have you found her? And he said, I hope you're sitting down.
The homicide squad has been called in to investigate the death of a woman in Melbourne. The 24-year-old's body was discovered last night on the ground floor of a St Kilda Road apartment building.
As soon as I found out how she died, ostensibly by climbing into a garbage chute when she was pissed.
I don't think she climbed in there by herself.
I have no idea how anybody thinks anybody could get in that thing.
She hated being caged and she was claustrophobic, so I can't see her ending her life that way.
Phoebe's farewell. You were Xena, warrior princess. Today, you will be honoured with a warrior's funeral and as Phoebe Phoenix. While we live, Phoebe lives.
This is episode 5 of Phoebe's Fall, a podcast from the Age newsroom in Melbourne. I'm Michael Batchelard.
And I'm Richard Baker.
And we've been investigating the short life and brutal death of Phoebe Handsjuck.
Look, I saw him with red eyes once. There was lots of people in the house. I found that very strange. And it was all quite sort of chatty and sparkly, and people were drinking and everybody had their little party frocks on, like the Kylie Minogue dresses. And it's like it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. This is a sad thing that's happened. It's not... It was very odd.
That's Shelley Tonkin. She was Phoebe and Anne Hample's cleaner. And she was at their apartment less than a week after Phoebe died.
I'm not saying it was a party atmosphere. To me, they were like grief junkies. Do you know what I mean? They were grief groupies. They were there because it was all, you know, a bit weird and a bit exciting and a bit
dramatic,
and they were all getting off on that. But there was very little talk of Phoebe.
The way Phoebe died was bizarre enough. But as the police were quickly concluding that it was a suicide, there was already a rift developing between Ant, his family and friends, and Phoebe's family.
Last episode, we heard how Phoebe's father, Len Handsjuck, felt so upset when Ant's father, the retired Supreme Court Judge George Hample, insisted just days after Phoebe's death that she'd killed herself.
Meanwhile, it seemed that Ant's reactions were also causing comment.
A uniformed police officer, Justin O'Brien, whose job it was to stay with Ant that first night, thought his demeanour was strange.
I then remained with Hample as Detective Senior Constable Robertson prepared to take the statement. During this time, Hample continued to cry. I observed that there were no tears running down his face, nor did it appear there had been any at all. Hample was sniffling, yet there was no sign of mucus or snot coming from his nose. His eyes were not bloodshot or red, and his face appeared quite normal.
These passages from the inquest are being dramatised because the coroner, Peter White, refused to release the audio.
When the time came for police to take the statement, Ant offered to help.
Detective Senior Constable Robertson then began taking the statement from Hample. Shortly after beginning the statement, Hample offered to type the statement as he is a quick typer. He laughed nervously and said, I might be faster. Hample then began typing the statement. Immediately he stopped crying, he calmed down and seemed totally normal. At the bottom of page one of his statement, he appeared upset and cried again for approximately 5 to 10 seconds.
Ant Hample was asked at the inquest for his reaction to Constable Robertson's observations.
I think that's possible. It was several hours later and I was in complete shock. So yes, I would agree.
Okay, Rich, but another policeman that night said Ant had reacted normally and was visibly upset and shocked. So it's hard to draw any conclusions from that one statement.
I agree. Everyone reacts differently to grief. One thing we do know is just hours after Phoebe died, Ant lashed out at Phoebe's old friend, Brendan Hessian, who she'd met for a drink earlier in the week.
The phone rang, maybe 5 a.m, 6 a.m. Ant didn't really know what he was on about. He was obviously accusing me of something, so I hope you're proud of the part you played. You got her drugs or something like that. Very accusing, and straight up my heart rate went up and I was very upset that he would do that. Told him where to go and hung up.
How did he sound? How was his voice sounding?
He sounded angry and threatening.
At the same time, tension between Ant and Phoebe's family was already starting to brew. Ant didn't want to identify Phoebe's body, something Natalie discussed with me when we went for a clifftop walk.
How she died. He said he didn't want to know how she died. I thought, well, gosh, we had to go there. We went to the morgue. You know, we had to see her, identify her. He hadn't done any of that. He hadn't wanted to identify her on the night.
Wasn't he?
He didn't want to see her body. So when we went to the coroner's court where her body was being held, we all viewed her in, behind a big glass window, and her body was covered over by a sheet, so we could only see her head. She looked bruised and battered on her face, and she had a cut, quite a sizable cut, right on the right-hand side of her jaw. And I remember standing there with Len, and we just stood there looking at her. It was a pretty horrific image, and very hard to get out of you. It's like, you know, once you've seen something, you can't unsee it.
And Ant might have been too upset to see Phoebe's body, but he did apply to be next of kin. At their first meeting, Natalie says Ant's stepmother, the judge Felicity Hample, explained to her that the law meant Ant, not Natalie, was Phoebe's next of kin.
4 days after Phoebe died, Ant made the application to the coroner. Natalie found out when she went to the court to apply to collect Phoebe's body. She was told she couldn't.
In the end, though, Ant gave consent for Phoebe's body to be released to her parents.
There were others who thought Ant's behaviour in the following days was strange.
That's right. Vanessa Levin, who's one of Ant's oldest friends, was often in the room with him and his supporters early on. She detected that something wasn't right.
This is our reconstruction of how the counsel assisting the coroner put questions to Ant about his behaviour at the inquest.
Vanessa Levin gave some evidence that she saw that you would access your Facebook and act normally. And when visitors arrived, and specifically the Handsjucks, you'd then become very upset and you would cry and curl yourself up on the couch. And she sensed that you were putting your emotions on and off. What do you say about that?
I think that's ridiculous and I completely deny it. Firstly, I was accessing Facebook because I had a lot of concerned friends who were contacting me. I was in a state of grief and shock. I mean, it was a complete roller coaster. So for someone to observe my behaviour as somewhat, you know, changing, I think would be understandable, yeah.
You know, Ant's in the other room and he's in a fetal position and he's crying, and there was the guy there who was there to hypnotise him to help him get through or whatever. So that, I mean, if that doesn't create a scenario for you that is bizarre, this is 3 days, 4 days after a hideous death.
That's Phoebe's grandmother, Jeanette Campbell. She says when she went to Ant's apartment, she felt a bit like she was on a stage set, but that nobody had explained her role.
What are my lines here? You know, we're having cucumber sandwiches. What am I supposed to say? Oh, cucumber sandwiches would be lovely. Not.
Meanwhile, 5 days after Phoebe died, the homicide squad let go of the case. They believed it was a suicide, so the coroner's office referred it to the local police to provide a brief.
This is standard procedure. When there's a suspicious or unusual death, the coroner uses a police brief to decide if he or she should hold an inquest.
But the early decision to rule it as a suicide had some unintended consequences. When the local detective, Brendan Payne, sought the help of the US government to get Phoebe's Gmail records from Google, he was told no.
American authorities will only get involved in these cases where the police suspect homicide, and of course, this was considered a suicide.
Back at the Valencia apartments in the weeks after Phoebe died, the concierge was receiving visits from another resident of the building, Christo van Egmond.
Soon after I arrived back at work, this Egmond person came into the concierge office. He had a bottle of wine and chocolates in his hand.
That's an actor reading the voice of Betul Ozulup, the concierge who found Phoebe's body.
She'd been so traumatised by the scene in the refuse room on the night of Phoebe's death that she took a few weeks off work.
Christo van Egmond is a colleague of Ant Hampel's. He was one of the people Ant was in meetings with on the day Phoebe died. Their families are friendly. And at the time of Phoebe's death, they even lived a few doors down the hall from each other on level 12 of the Valencia building.
But at the inquest, Christo said theirs was purely a working relationship. He's an actor reading his evidence.
I wouldn't say I would mingle on a regular social basis with him. I mean, when we work together, when, say, for example, we're on a tour together, we'll go and have dinners and catch up. I'd see him out possibly see him out at the bar and might have a drink with him.
Yeah, okay, but they did have some connection. There's photos on Facebook showing them on a yacht together in Europe and some matey banter in comments.
Anyway, back to Batul and Christo's meetings.
And he told me how it was hard for me, what I was going through, and that Phoebe was depressed and that Anthony was trying everything to help her out and things like that.
Christo also told Batul that Phoebe couldn't be saved. She didn't want to be saved.
He would come every second or third day and repeat the things that he would say, and this continued for roughly about 2 weeks, and that's when I sort of, like, got a little bit upset, and I said that I don't want to talk regarding this matter anymore.
Christo confirmed at the inquest that he'd said all these things to Batul. He said he'd heard them while he was hanging around at Ant's apartment, but he said he wasn't trying to convince her of anything or sway her views. He was just being nice to her because it was Christmas.
Around this time, Ant was trying to get paperwork together to prove his and Phoebe's de facto relationship was genuine. He needed it to close some of Phoebe's accounts. So he approached Phoebe's friend, Alicia Carville, to help out.
It was just out of the blue. We got an email just asking that I would state that he was in a loving relationship with Phoebe. And again, I was outraged because I would never speak on her behalf, and those words have never came out of her mouth to me, so I couldn't answer that.
Shortly after Coroner Peter White delivered his finding that Phoebe's death was an accident, Ant Hampel put in a claim to Phoebe's superannuation fund to receive a death benefit payment. His father, George Hampel, signed a statutory declaration to support his claim.
So, Rich, what's wrong with that? A death benefit was payable, and Ant was her de facto, so someone had to claim it.
Well, that's true, but in his statutory declaration, George Hampel overstates the length of their live-in relationship by about 6 months. He has Phoebe and Ant living together before they'd even met. I'm sure the overstatement wasn't intentional, but you would expect a former Supreme Court judge to be a bit more precise.
Regardless of the rights and wrongs, the death benefit issue was another source of tension between the Hansjucks and the Hampels. Eventually, Ant got $113,000, and after months of to-ing and fro-ing, he gave it to Phoebe's brothers.
But the split now opening up between the two families was virtually beyond repair. Each went their separate ways in organising memorial services for Phoebe.
There were two services in Melbourne. One was held at the Collingwood Children's Farm at the Abbott, the convent there. And then Ant had what I really saw as a production at the Melbourne Yacht Club. And
that's Phoebe's grandmother, Jeanette. She went to Ant's yacht club ceremony, but Phoebe's parents, Natalie and Len, stayed away.
I think it was because of the experience at Ant's flat. And also, I know Len was really angry because of George's assault on him, if you like. And I just
when Jeanette refers to an assault, she's talking about George Hampel's insistence that Len accept Phoebe's death as a suicide.
And I just think they felt this wasn't going to be honouring Phoebe at all. This was about a display. But
others close to Phoebe had to decide which service they'd attend.
Sarah Howitt, the boxer and Phoebe's karate friend, went to Ant's service, but she regretted it.
The weird thing was when that send-off, whatever the hell it was, that was done at the yacht club, that was something I couldn't see. I didn't see the girl that I knew when I saw all the pictures and the photos. It was just them on holidays. I didn't recognise her with her hair cut short and dark. I just couldn't believe how somebody that I knew so well had changed so much. I didn't see her there. It made me feel sick and anxious. And I left feeling lost and like I'd just attended some stranger's send-off.
Some old friends, like Brendan Heshen, weren't even invited.
I wasn't impressed with that, but if that's what he wanted to do, that's what he wanted to do. I'm pretty sure Phoebe wouldn't have wanted it that way. So.
Grandma Jeanette recalls the family ceremony as a much lower-key affair at an old convent by the Yarra River.
A lot of people that were very old friends of the family were there, and there was just the whole feeling of compassion or whatever it was for everybody. I don't know, it sort of sounds corny, but there just seemed to be a lot of love in that place.
Phoebe's ashes were laid to rest in her beloved Mallacoota.
The actual cremation, which Aunt didn't go to, was at Springvale, which was where the only time that the body was actually present. And then the ashes were brought down here for the ceremony that we held at the lake.
I looked for you.
This song, Ballroom, is written and performed by Hazel Brown, a friend of Phoebe's. 6 years after Phoebe died, Hazel still wonders if things could have been different.
I saw Phoebe the day before she died, but she didn't see me. We hadn't spoken in about a year at that point. I was just driving home. She was just there, and I remember thinking, oh, she's changed her hair, because I hadn't seen her when she had short, dark hair. And at the time, I had a lot of regret about not going to see her, obviously. I wonder if anything would be different.
Hazel wasn't the only female friend Phoebe had drifted away from. She told Sarah Howitt, her karate friend, that she worried about why she'd grown apart from them.
Well, I said to her, I go, Phoebe, they're intimidated by you. One, you can kick ass, literally, now. And two, you make Angelina Jolie look like a moth compared to you as a butterfly.
On behalf of Glenn and myself, I want to thank you all for being a part of this very special day, where we have farewelled Phoebe.
Plenty of Phoebe's friends showed up at Mallacoota for the Hansjuk family's unique celebration of her life.
I wrote a little list about the people, specific people I want to thank, but it just got too much. I just want everyone. I just wanted to thank you from all of us.
Phoebe's father, Len, who's of Norwegian descent, learned how to bend wood to build a Viking boat for Phoebe's final journey.
And we went to Norway, because my father's from that part of the world, and we went to the Viking Museum out of Oslo, and there was these beautiful boats that I took photos of. So that became the basis for the thing that I built after Phoebe died.
So this is the site of Phoebe's final farewell. I think there were about 40 of us that gathered here on this little beach, and the boat that Len had made was just here on the shallows with her ashes, and we had the all the letters that that her friends and family had written at the memorial service were in the boat as well, and it was draped with marigolds.
Phoebe's farewell. Phoebe, beloved granddaughter, my first grandchild, we're all here gathered in this place you loved so much to bid you a final farewell.
This is Jeanette speaking at the Lakeside farewell ceremony.
After the flame, a pause. After the pain, rebirth. Obeying nature's laws, the phoenix goes to earth. And one cold, starry night, whatever your belief, the phoenix will take flight over the seas of grief. We are here because we all have one thing in common. We love you and have been loved by you. You are our Phoebs, Phoebsy, Tiger, Pixie, GDGD, many more names. And you had names for yourself. You were Xena, Warrior Princess. You were Phoenix. Today, you will be honoured with a warrior's funeral and as Phoebe Phoenix.
And we lit the boat and the boys pushed it out, and we all just stood and watched it burn. And this was beautiful. The evening was beautiful. The sun was setting and, yeah, it was fantastic. She's got a very beautiful resting place. There's a couple of whistling kites that live nearby, and I'm always reminded of Phoebe when I see birds, and Mum too. And we think that she must be a bird by now. So, yeah, and just a beautiful old place that changes all the time. And there's the whistling kite. It's come. Did you hear that?
Boats, how I love them. They make me feel safe. They hold possibility, hope, a promise of something different, another place entirely. It's beautiful here, but in a tame way. How I miss the wildness, jagged rock edge, huge seas. I long for a storm to sweep through here, churn everything up. And she loved that sort of sea down at Ballacoota. Mm. I read this sort of thing, which is in a way just written by my daughter, but it gives me a bit of an insight into the way that she felt and thought and perceived the world. And it's distressing because your children are your future.
I half expected her to call me that year when she was 24 and say, I'm pregnant, because that's how old I was when I had her. That's how alike our lives were. It was, I'm not proud of it, but it was like she was living my life all over again. She died in the very year that I had her, and I consider that really the birth of her was saved me from myself. You know, she sort of saved me, and then she left the life at the same time as I gave birth to her.
Despite the funerals and send-offs, though, it seems that Phoebe has a restless spirit. Her family and friends find it hard to let her go or to forget the way she died. Perhaps because so many unanswered questions remain.
Christmas is really hard for everyone, which is very sad for the boys, but every time we try and do something with the family that's a traditional thing, it's just, she's missing. So no one wants to do it anymore. You know, it's just like, oh God, you know, she's not here. And the hole that she leaves is huge still.
Thank you.
keeps getting brought up and brought up, and it sort of it does make you makes it a lot harder to kind of deal with it on your own terms. And when you've got all these outside, you've got media saying things, you've got family saying things, you've got friends of, you know, people saying things.
That's Phoebe's younger brother, Tom. They were really close growing up.
You know, one of the scary things that you find with this is that, you know, you think that even someone so close to you, you think your memories are going to remain really vivid, but they seem to sort of quite rapidly become quite vague. And also just sitting there and hearing people talk very kind of clinically about someone who's, you know, who you were tied to primarily emotionally, that's really, really challenging, because it, you know, to be able to sort of maintain your own sense of connection to that person without that connection then feeling clinical in itself.
One of Phoebe's oldest friends, Alicia Carville, is also still grieving.
My brother always told me you can only count your true friends on one hand. And to me, my connection with Phoebe, she was a true friend. And when you lose a best friend, you feel like you're losing a bit of your soul. So there's a part of her, like a part of me that I'll never get back because it's gone. She's not here anymore. And I don't know what happened to her. So I just really hope that something comes to light, that we get more information to find out why this has happened in our lives. Because she should be here. That's it.
The memory Sarah Howitt shared earlier about Phoebe being a butterfly to Angelina Jolie's moth followed her the day after the Viking ceremony.
The next day, I went to pick up my car, and as I was driving home, I just couldn't drive home. And I just kept driving. I think I was going for about 4 hours. All of a sudden, I turned off this weird turn off, and there were mountains on both sides. And I just kept driving along this road. No one was around, and I just got out of the car and I was watching these two little butterflies, and which felt like an eternity I was watching them for. And summoned up the courage to say two of the hardest words I've had ever had to say at that point in time, which was goodbye, Phoebe. And I burst into tears, and then I went to get in my car, and all of a sudden, hundreds of these butterflies came out and swarmed all the way around me. They swarmed around my car, around, I had my arms up. They swarmed under my arms, around my head, and I was just laughing and crying at the exact same time. And I just said, "You fucker." It was her.
Underneath our window, there was a crossing. We used to stand there and watch. And now I'm on it, and every time I cross it, I do my best not to look up.
Next time on Phoebe's Fall.
My initial reaction was he did not want to have an inquest. And the finding came out as if there hadn't been one.
There are a number of possibly unexplained injuries present on Phoebe's body, which need not necessarily have occurred during the fall. And I feel, therefore, that the most appropriate finding would be open.
If you found any of the material in this podcast disturbing, you can call Lifeline or Beyond Blue if you're in Australia, or your local crisis service.
Phoebe's Fall is presented by Richard Baker and Michael Batchelard, with additional reporting by Nick McKenzie. Production by Tom McKendrick and Tim Young. The consulting producers are Julie Pizzetti and Siobhan McHugh. Matt Absalom Wong manages web development for the series, and our production assistants are Jake Evans and Lucy Dean. Audience development support from Dewey Cook and Michael Schlechter. Our executive producer is Michael Batchelard. You can find extra features for this series at theage.com.au/Phoebe's Fall, and if you want to contact us anonymously, click on the link Do You Know Something? For access to the best investigations, news exclusives, commentary and more, subscribe to The Age or the Sydney Morning Herald at theage.com.au or smh.com.au. Just click subscribe.